Today's daf is daf nun tes, and we were having a bit of a problem trying to understand what it is that, how it is that an inbo is central to the zug for bell, and how it is that if you detach the clapper from the bell, that under certain circumstances it is considered to be a kli, and under other circumstances it isn't considered to be a kli. We found this very confusing. We originally began with the kli of a behemah. That's how we got into the whole issue. We're trying to figure out why in one case it's saying that if it's an inbosh of a behemah, it's certainly not the kabbal tumah. And on the other hand, it says in the Pirush and the Mishnah that shel behemah is mekabel tumah, as long as, because anything that's a kli adam is considered, to contrast it with a doorbell. A doorbell is not mekabel tumah because it's mechubar to the house. But a bell on a behemah is considered to be no different than our famous dancing bear baton. It's used for kli adam. So there we came up with the interesting idea that a kli can be defined by its ability to make music. We learned that from the word dover, diber. Okay, so that made sense. But then we got into the question of the clothing that contains little bells on it, that, as distinguished from something that is worn by an adult. And we said that over there, the children like the bells. And that's why it is that we have something, the yuchad. If it doesn't have a clapper, then it's a problem. If it's the color of it. Mashenkeina gadol is a takshit. Those were basically, we had three levels. A bell that is made for its communication. So there, if it doesn't ring, it's useless. And that's a kli ma'aseh bell, without a kli kibel. We want the kibel in it completely. We're only interested in the fact that it's a usable instrument to let a human know where his animal is. Okay, that makes it a kli. Then we had the other extreme, in which it's a takshit, we couldn't care less whether it makes music or not. All we're interested in is how it looks. That was the case of the Yevet, that it's mekabel tumah. It doesn't matter whether it actually works. The Gabi, that was a Gabi tumah, by the way, with Gabi Shabbos, it was a completely different set of concerns, because by behemah we have the question of whether it looks like you're taking the animal to market. That's a whole different problem, which is a kaleh legabe. Even kalim on a behemoth, even tachshitim, and even malbushim, where we don't want to do anything that looks like chinga, like you're going to the market. And by an adam, the concern that we would have would only be if it's something that would possibly fall off, which over there, if it's around the neck, it can fall off. In the case of the beged, we said, it's talking about where it's professionally manufactured with the beggars, woven into the beggar, there's no chashash that it's going to fall off. So it's bichlal, we've been having, and it's getting worse, and it's going to get worse today, which we finally come to the crunch. I think we'll get to it today, I hope we'll get to it today. We come to the crunch and finally speak out that it's wrong to make too much of a parallel between the dinim of kalim for Shabbat and the dinim of kalim for Tumah. So far we haven't mixed our metaphors. I mean, we understand that we've got a completely different set of concerns when it comes to Tzav Shabbos, and we do in defining the nature of a kli when it comes to the Torah. Okay, so again, we have the distinctions l'gabe Shabbat, we have the distinctions l'gabe the type of inbo for Kabbalah's Tumah. The question that was bothering the Gemara yesterday and that leads us to today's sugya is, why does it say nitlu in belehem adayin tumatan alehem? They're still considered to be tame, despite the fact that the inbal is no longer attached, even in those cases where it was made for the noise value of it, or the children like to have the sound. So elam inbal tohorim nitlu in belehem they are adayin tameim. We said that according to Rashi, we have over here a middle class in which initially, if you have something that wasn't workable, it wouldn't be mekabel tumah. But now it was mekabel tumah while it was workable. I detached the inbal, it's no longer workable. So if l'chatchila wasn't mekabel tumah, it wouldn't be mekabel tumah now. But the question is a detached inbal sufficient to be considered shvirat hakli? And now it will not retain the tumah that it had on it before, it's kelim that are nishbarim, do not retain their tumah. And we have yet a third level in which a kli is completely destroyed and will even lose the tumah that's on it. We mentioned yesterday that Tosfos disagrees that that's the pshat in our Gemara. He doesn't believe that there's this middle thing. And he says the difference is that if it didn't have the invul in the first place, it was still called a golem. And golem kli matechet, unfinished kelim, and not makabel tumah. We don't need to make up a third class. But Tosfos himself had to admit that in fact in the Tosefta, it seems clear that there is a whole different area of kelim that were makabel tumah, and are not broken to the extent that they will lose their tumah. Even though they're not functional right now. So let's assume that we're talking about this middle stage. We're going to continue to talk about the middle stage today. We were worried about why it's not considered to be broken. That was the question yesterday. Removal of an invul, as our president suggested, is the ultimate breakage of a musical instrument. It can't make music. So, I mean, what's the point? So we had a number of approaches yesterday, and this related bichlal to something that we've already seen in our Masechta a number of times. Remember, we had the question before, we bring it up once again about the scissors in which they're meant to be removed in order to be oiled and stored, and so you put them back together again, or the carpenter's plane. So we brought it up once again. I mean, these things are considered to be chibur l'chora only at the time that they're actually connected. If you take them apart, they're not considered to be a chibur. Why, therefore, is this thing not going to lose its tumah? And so, one approach that we had was, because it isn't really removed in a way that can't be put back by anybody. So a hedyot is able to restore it. A hedyot's able to restore it, doesn't make any difference anymore, and it's not considered to be broken. Okay. On the other hand, if it's not mechubar, it's not ready to be mekabel tumah. So we have this middle stage. Rava suggested yesterday, it was the last thing we read yesterday, Ela Amar Rava, which we repeated again, first line on our page, Hoyel v'ra'ui l'hakisho al-gabe cheres. You cannot consider it to have lost its functionality, because a bell without a clapper is no different than a non-safety match without a box. It's usable. It's not as conveniently usable that you could take it. You bang it on something. It makes noise. So therefore, it's not considered to be broken. We have the same type of thing where we find kelim that have holes in them. So you made it originally to be a punchable, and now it gets a hole in it. It's still usable to serve candies in, because the candies won't run out through the hole. So over there you don't have the loss of a tumah, because it still serves the same general function that it served before. So here too, we're going to explain now the entire thing. We'll say a behema bell without a clapper is not considered to be a bell, because the only way that an animal's bell would be a kli, ma'aseh, for an adam, is if it's being used for communicating to the Adam. If it's not used for communicating, it's not usable, then it's considered to be tame. Right? Otherwise, and what else is it going to be? L'gabi Shabbos, that's another question. An adult doesn't require an inbel at all. For him, it's a kli because it's a decoration. It's also a type of kli. It doesn't have to be a kli maaseh. It can be a beged. So it's a type of beged. It's also makabel tumah. And then we had the children bell that we spoke about before, depending on whether the clapper is attached now or not attached. Or we say, if it never had a clapper attached to it, so then it certainly is an unfinished kli. But if it had a clapper attached to it, and it was makabel tumah, so then it will not lose its tumah, because there are shiurim, again, this is Rashi's chat, there are shiurim in breakage. The different levels of breakage. This is not considered to be a breakage to lose tumah. It's only considered to be that it's not the kli that it was meant to be. Now, obviously, if lechatchila, you made a punch bowl, and now it had a hole in it. So according to Rashi, this is the middle stage. It won't be makabel tumah, but it won't lose its tumah. On the other hand, obviously, if you now take this broken punch bowl and you make it into a candy dish, so kol ha'kelim ha'yordim v'dei tumatam d'machshava. Once you decide to use it as a candy dish, It's now a completely whole clay again, presto, despite the fact that it has a hole in it. It's a holy candidate. Okay, that's fine. So that would be, according to Rashi's pshat, the way to do it. I must tell you that there's a devastating girsa problem in Rashi, and Rashi seems to have gone back on his own pshat. But many indeed say that it was a mistaken girsa, and we have to put it back. You just want to take a look in Rashi just to feel the sense of the connection to the sugya. At the end of the long Rashi on top of the daf, so what he says over there is, five lines up from the end of that Rashi, B'shelo haya lo'in ba mi'olam, d'lo nigmara malachtan, so then there's certainly torim, right? That's, would not be makabel tumah. Nitilu in b'leihem, and here is where we get into the problem, nitibu in b'leihem, bein lifnei tumah, bein li'achra tumah, t'naim. Now that doesn't make any sense, because according to Rashi, Nitilu in b'leihem is only would only be tamei if it was liachar hatuma. Remember, Rashi believes that there's a third stage. This would be all very nice to say according to Tosfos, but according to Rashi, that doesn't make any sense. And indeed, there are those that change the gears to acharei tumata and only acharei tumata. That would be consistent with Rashi's approach earlier in the sugya. So we have three levels of kabbalas tumah. And we have three different types of usages for an inval: communication, takshit, and plaything. Plaything that's attached as a takshit to a kli, like the child's bib, and so on.
Now the punch bowl idea. So, isn't that it's not enough that he just keeps it? I would say.
Not according to Rashi. Yeah. Om Rav Yosi b'Rebbe Chanina. I'm sorry, Idmar Nami, Omer B'Yosef Rebbe Chanino, Ho'iv Ro'i La Kishoa Gavacheres. It's considered not to have lost its Shem Kli because it's not broken. It still rings. It doesn't ring on its own, so fine, so it'll ring against something else. And here we come to a fascinating issue, Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Ho'iv Ro'i La Gamea B'Mayim Latinok. You can always use a bell without a clapper as a child's cup. It's a small cup, fits into a child's mouth. So what would be better to use than a bell that doesn't have a clapper? It's a broken bell, but it's a perfectly good cup. What are the implications of Rabbi Yochanan's statement? That a kli does not have to perform its function to be a kli, it has to perform a function to be a kli, even though that function is not the initial function for which it was manufactured. Certainly the manufacturer wasn't offering it a combined, one of the modern, just add a clapper and get a bell out of your baby cup kind of idea, in which one thing serves all. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan holds, the technical term for this is me'ein melacha versus me'ein melacha rishona. So it can still do a type of work. It can do a type of work, meaning it's still a tool. It's a tool for holding water and giving it to a child. But it's not a tool in the same way that it was originally. Originally it was a tool for making noise, and now it's a tool for feeding children. There's no connection between the two. So apparently Rabbi Yochanan holds that you don't need me'in melacha rishona to be considered unbroken. It doesn't mean that it can be considered whole. Again, but it's not broken. If it was machshava, then vada would be makabel tumah. The question is what is considered to be broken. Okay. So now, apparently, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, therefore, that you don't need melacha rishona, but Rabbi Yochanan himself, unfortunately, has elsewhere made it clear that you do need in melacha rishona, and we have what appears to be a contradiction in Rabbi Yochanan. Ask the Gemara. Are you saying that Rabbi Yochanan lo boi me'ein melacha rishona? That according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's okay as long as you could do something with it, even though it's not its original purpose? Vatanya, we have a braita which will be followed by a machloket in which Rabbi Yochanan has here something to say. So the braita is talking about the pasuk of a Mishkav Hazav, Midrasot Hazal. So there it says, and pay close attention to the Lashon Atid that is used in the Pasuk. Kol ha-mishkav asher yishkav alav azav, not asher shachav alav azav, yitma. V'chol ha-kli asher yeshev alav yitma, and not yashav alav yitma. Why is the Torah using a language of atid where it's not the point of atid? Because it's to teach us that yocho kafa sa'av yashav aleha, kafa tarkav v'yashav aleha, yehitamei. You might think that if a Zav takes a bucket or a bushel, turns it upside down and sits down on it, then that bucket or bushel will be in the Kabel Tuma from him as a Moshav. Talmud Lomar therefore stresses the Torah, Asher Yeshev Alav Azav, that which is meant for the Zav to sit on. It's only Misha Miuchad LeYeshiva. Yatzazeh Shabrim Lo, excuse me, sir, will you please get up? We're busy working here. Amod v'naseh v'lachteno. We're trying to carry fruit, and you're sitting on our bucket. So that's not called Asher Yeshev. It's not meant for his. It's the thing that Azov sits on. It's the thing that Azov is sitting on, but it's not what he's going to sit on. Therefore, we use the Lashon Atid to teach me that it's got to be servicing a human in the same way that it was initially servicing him. So it's not meant for this type of service. So Rabbi Elazar says this whole halakha is limited to midrasot. This is a special halakha. It occurs only in the parsha of Zivot. So bim midrasot omrim amod v'naseh malachteinu. But certainly ein omrim b'tamei meit amod v'naseh malachteinu. Now, it's important to distinguish here between the nature of our concern, which is something that is broken, that has already been metabled to him. Remember, this is how Rashi learns the whole sugya. And the case over here of midrasot. Because in midrasot, the type of kli that it is defined legabe kabbalas tuma originally. We're not talking about over here whether it's broken or not. We're talking about what is it. When you have something that's in an Oel HaMet, now if there's a mate in the Oel, everything in the house is considered to be Tomei, right? There's nobody who's going to say, aha, but those candlesticks weren't meant to be used by a mate. So why would they be Mekabel Tumah from a mate? Nobody has a Havamina like that. We understand when the Torah says everything in the house is Tomei, it means even the baby clothing is coming, which wasn't meant to be used by the mate for burial or anything like that. So in other words, we do not require that which is metame a thing to be the thing that it was meant to be used for. Now this is a whole brand new issue. We never even dreamt of such a thing. To come along and to say that something will be makabel tuma only when it's used in a way that was the very thing that was metame it, is an outrageous chiddush, correct? Oh, it's a brand new idea. It has nothing to do with the definition of kalim. So the whole Gemara right now is comparing something that really, on the surface, has nothing to do with our question. Our question is, what defines the nature of a kli, period? Couldn't care less what's batamia. Once it's a kli, it's included in the set of things that are makabel tuma. If it's not a kli, it's not, that's all. We have over here a very unique case. Why is it unique? Because the mode in which it's used is the only reason that it's makabel tuma. Normally, your makabel tuma by touching something would be perfectly okay, or by being in the OL. It makes no difference whether this is a thing that's meant to be touched or meant to be in the OL or anything else. But when it comes to midrasot hazav, if a zav touches a kli, suppose a zav would touch this kli, this tarka. Would the Tarkav be Makabel Tuma from the Zav? Gentlemen! Would the Tarkav be Makabel Tuma? Absolutely! Certainly. What level of Tuma would it have? A Rishon Tuma. A Zav is an Ava Tuma who can be Batami Kalim. And if he touches a bucket, doesn't matter whether the bucket is right side up, or the bucket is upside down, or he touches its inside, or he touches its outside, it's Makabel Tuma from the Zav. But suppose the Tsar doesn't touch the bucket. He puts on a glove, and then he touches the bucket. Is the bucket going to be makabel tuma?
Yes.
No, because the glove is not an avatuma.
It's a rishon.
Exactly, and a kli cannot be makabel tuma from a rishon tuma. Okay. Now suppose the same gloved Zav sits on this kli, and he's got a glove on his rear end, which is called pants. Okay, and now, he's not Matame the Kli. But he is. If it's a chair, so why is that? Huh? First of all, he's not touching through Marga. He's touching through Moshav. Moshav doesn't require Nigia. And what's worse is paradoxically, despite the fact that he never came in contact with it, not only is it Mekabel Tuma, it's even a Avatuma. Right, if he touches it, it'll be Batame, a person who touches it. And a person is also only Mekabel Tuma from an Avatuma. Okay. So that means that the mode through which the Tuma is now transferred is central to an understanding of the concept of Nigras. It's different than everything else. There's a specific relationship between the Kli that is being Mekabel the Tuma and the Adam that's giving him the Tuma. Because if I take a candlestick and I sit down on a candlestick, I will not be metamei a candlestick with moshav. Because it's not a moshav. It just happens to be underneath my glove, so to speak, right? And it's not going to be mekabel tuma. Therefore, this whole question of amod v'naaseh melachteinu comes not to define the kli, but rather comes to define the nature of the relationship of the hishtamshut of the kli to the mishamesh and the mitameh. You're telling me if it's a bucket and I turn it upside down, it's all very nice to claim that you're sitting down on something, but you aren't really. It's no different than sitting down on a candlestick. Okay? Now that has nothing to do with the definition of a kli on the surface. Therefore comes along now Rabbi Elazar to say, don't get confused. I mean, the fact that we say that there's such a thing of amod v'naaseh melachteinu, we would never, ever suggest that there's such a concept when it comes to tamei mate. For a tamei mate, we wouldn't say amod v'naaseh melachteinu. We would simply decide. Is it a kli? Nope. If it's a kli, makabel tuma. It's not a kli, not makabel tuma. Do I care whether the way in which it was makabel tuma was the way in which the mate decided to use it? But if it was a cup, it's only makabel tuma if the mate takes a drink from it. There's no such havamina. Good. Says Rabbi Yochanan, no. I have a very interesting point to make, says Rabbi Yochanan. My point is that you're 100% right. Nobody in his right mind would think that the mate has to take a drink from a cup in order to become tamei mate. However, there is nonetheless some fallout from this concept of amod v'naaseh melachteinu. And indeed we would say, even when it comes to a tamei mate, amod v'naaseh melachteinu. And we have to use our imagination. So what's Rabbi Yochanan talking about? He's not being very clear. He certainly doesn't mean to tell us that in kli maaseh, it needs to be defined by the relationship. That's outrageous. Nobody ever heard of such a thing. As it runs against the pasuk. The pasuk says everything in the oil is tamei. The only thing that Rabbi Yochanan could mean is that the fallout from the concept of amod v'naaseh melachteinu will define for us the bittul of a kli. If a kli has a type of usage, asher yeshev alav, by implication, the type of usage for which the kli is miyuad is central to an understanding of its nature of kli, its kliness. So if it will not be able to do ever the thing for which it was manufactured, then it no longer is a kli. It's broken.
The pasuk was like that with a kli.
Yeah, what is that? Garbage. Mm-hmm. Hmm? Let's wait a moment till the smell passes. If it passes, that's true garbage. You can't learn to that. Oh, yeah.
Is that we're using something?
Hmm? No. There must be empty.
Close the window?
Yeah, maybe we better close the window and then we'll turn on the air or something.
Is that
moment, right?
Yeah.
The air has a tendency to come to an open door as well, even though it's not massive like Fano. Now we've safely locked the garbage in the room. But now it's Ain Lo Iker. This is really not good.
That's how it's not
gathered.
Maybe
in
the
oil,
it's not a kliyah shabbat, since it's not in its original
view. What they're saying. No, what they're saying is this. The Torah has fallout from one idea introduced another. Because even though it's certainly true that it's only the relationship of the zav to the kli that makes the difference, and therefore it's only by midrasot that we would have such a concern, but it's also true that the Torah is saying that that relationship is defined by its standard usage and not its specific usage. In other words, if I take a bushel and I turn it upside down, don't think it's being used as a bushel, as a chair. It's not being used as a chair. But it is, but it's not. So in other words, what you see is that there's a concept called intended use. Once that concept was introduced by the terrorists, says Rabbi Yochanan, then we have no choice but to consider it to be meaningful in terms of tailoring. For what? In a normal tumah, there is no relationship between the intended use and the way that the tumah becomes attached to the kli. It's irrelevant. Aha! But there is a place where I can actually apply this across the board. Where a kli is broken, and can no longer be used for its intended use, although it can still be used for another use. From here I see that the Torah values intended use and not other usages. Oh, there you go. So that difference won't matter when it comes to the way in which a kli will be makabel tuma, but it will very much matter when it comes to determining whether a kli is a kli. That, yes. You see? So it's a brilliant thing that Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Except, unfortunately, it's the opposite of what he said over here. Here he said you could take a bell, turn it upside down, and use it as a baby's cup. And here he's saying, no, a broken kli is only a kli for its intended usage. There is somebody in there. You want to please see what's going on? Okay. So, therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, "Afo mer betomei meit amod menasim lachtenu," is a contradiction to Rabbi Yochanan, who says, "Ho'il v'ro'ui legamei abomayim v'tinok." Clear question. Answers the Gemara, you're right, there is absolutely no way out of this question. And what we're going to have to do is admit that we made a mistake, and that epuch kamaita. The first thing that we had two explanations. We had Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Hanina's explanation, that the bell can be hit against something else to ring. That was what Rabbi Yochanan had said. And the latter part, which is that a bell is usable as a child's cup, that was actually Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Hanina, not Rabbi Yochanan. Well, maichazita dafakta kamaita, afak patraita. What makes you think that the first time we were wrong, maybe the second time we were wrong? And let's now invert Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan and say that it was Rabbi Yochanan who said that Einom Rim B'Tomei Meit Amod Menasim L'Avinu, which would be consistent with the first part, and it was Rabbi Elazar who said that even with Tomei Meit we're concerned for the original usage of the kli. Is it now okay?
Not good smell in there, but we don't
see anything. Like okay. Alright, so there's nothing there now. There's no problem in.
No, it needs the airing out.
Okay, well, fine. But I'm saying, but at least we don't have to worry about rotting.
Unless it wasn't the stuff.
Huh?
We don't see it unless there's something behind.
Okay, yeah, okay, so it's at least covered in a way that's not there. Let's see. Answers the Gemara, I'll tell you why I chose to say that Rabbi Yochanan in our sugya is a confusion with Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Hanina. It's because I have other proof that Rabbi Yochanan indeed does require me'in melacha rishona. Hashamina leila Rav Yochanan deboy me'in melacha rishona from another sugya. The other sugya is also a mishnah that talks about, it should say, the tanan, sandal shel be'imah shel matechet tameh. That if you have a, and this is basically armor, this is used during wartime, surely, so that you armor an animal's foot by putting metal over it to protect it, it's considered to be tameh. Now, lechora, it's nothing but an animal kli, and we've already seen that animal kalim are not makabel tumah. So what makes this into a human kli? It's certainly not something that is used for being manig the animal or anything else. It's a simple malbush for an animal. Malbush for an animal should not be makabel tumah. So Rav says, Lamai Chazi, what's it useful for? Rav says, look, in war you do things you wouldn't normally do. If you're dying of thirst and you're in the middle of a battle and you come to a stream and you got to drink fast, you fill it up with water and you drink it. So it's usable as a kli. And this is something that people will do. No, it's not a horseshoe, it's a real shoe. Rabbi Chanina Amar, Ro'i Lasuch Bo Shemen B'Milchama. You could always use it for a container for some type of ointment or something, although you wouldn't drink from it. Let's see what they're arguing in. And Rabbi Yochanan comes up with the craziest Egyptian usage, which is B'Sha'ah She'Boreach Min HaKrav Menicho B'Raglav. When you're running away from the battle, in a pinch you can put on these things and run in places where they normally won't be able to follow you. Ratz ala kotzin v'ala barkanim. You can go through thistles and thorn bushes and so on, and thereby get out of the way of danger. Now, apparently, Rav Yochanan is not satisfied with the other usages, because to say that it's a shoe, and I'm going to turn it into a container for drink, wouldn't make it a kli that I would be mitami, because it's not omate for its initial malacha. So if you tell me, and obviously this is all by extension, well, it's again, we're not talking here about broken kalim. We're going back to the way in which it occurs, similar to the way in which the original concept occurs by midrasot. Because here we need to describe the relationship of the shoe to the user. The animal is the original user. An animal shoe will not be makabel tumah.
Why is that?
Because it's only klei adam that are makabel tumah, which we saw yesterday. But if the animal shoe has within it elements for which it's usable by an adam, which are the same type of use that we would have for the shoe of the behemah, then included in its shoeness is in fact its human connection. So since I'm armoring my animal, this is a secondary usage in a war for use of that armor for myself. But it would have to be the same type of usage. So this is very much the extended version of Yeshev Alav Hazav. In fact, it's closer to the original meaning, is it not? Because it's defining the relationship between the user and the kli, rather than the use and the kli, which is the extended meaning that Rav Yochanan gave it earlier. These are concepts that you'll really enjoy. They're mamash up your alley. All right. So we have three dargas over here. We have the original meaning of the pasuk is defining the relationship between the user who is the netame and the kli. We have Rav Yochanan's wild extension of this idea, which is the relationship between the kli and its use in general. And over here we have something in the middle, which is very similar to the original idea, because it does define the nature of the user, but it's, that is to say, is the user an animal or is the user a human, but it doesn't define the nature of the metame and his relationship to the kli. But nonetheless, once Rav Yochanan is ready to extend the use of an animal armor to an adam's usage in a pinch, and only that way, and not for other things like a cup, it means that he remains now makbid on the idea that the Torah taught us in the Din of Midrasot, which is it's got to be related to its initial usage. And therefore, it wouldn't make sense to say it was Rabbi Yochanan who took Rabbi Elazar's side, because then he would be contradicting himself here. Why, in the case of the armor, is he saying it has to be similar to the original usage? Makes much more sense that Rabbi Yochanan got mixed up with Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina in our sugya, and he was the one that had really said you have to be able to use a bell for making sounds, but not for giving a child a drink.
But the far-fetched, a human foot can fit into a horseshoe, and
then
you'd be able to
run with it. Horseshoe? Horseshoe? We're talking about elephants.
Horse food.
No, he knows. He knows. He's saying a shoe for a horse. He didn't mean that. Something that the shape is rather different.
Just like ancient
one.
What's
that?
Just like ancient one. They all caressed it. They stuck out of the ground. It's like you clap foot and put your foot in.
No, no, I'm saying
an armor? You think?
Metal. It could be
used. Or it's also.
Well, we'll see. There's another metal shoe that was used for protection for people, for painters, because they would use seed, literal seed, and the seed damages leather terribly. So they would make an armored shoe and stick their. They couldn't walk with it unless it was on a bench. So now the practical
chain metal can be put on, which can run away in the war or something.
So the practical nafkaminas, I mean, are definitely involved over here, because ma bein rav l'Rabbi Chanina. I mean, if rav is saying that we're talking about something that is common, it's common to drink, to desperately need something to drink from in war, and therefore if it's mois, rav wouldn't accept it, but it's really disgusting. You don't feel it's drinkable from. What are you going to say? But at least you can use it as an ointment. Show me how many soldiers are running around using ointment in the middle of the battle. So that's not considered to be a normal usage. Bein Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina, you could be now the yakir. An afkamina between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan holds that the point over here is to be able to run. If it's very heavy, you ain't going to be able to run with it. And therefore, according to him, a heavy shoe is going to hamper your running away, and the whole point here is to get out as fast as you can.
Throw off the shoes.
Exactly. Throw off. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. A woman is not allowed to go out wearing an Irshel Zahav. My the Irshel Zahav, Rabbi Bar Bachana Rav Yochanan, means a Yerushalayim de Dahava, and it's Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Kida Avid Le Rabbi Akiva Le Davitu, in the famous story of Rabbi Akiva and his wife, where he made her a beautiful Yerushalayim out of gold. And then we find, in fact, that there's a machlok as to what this is in terms of masi. Tana Rabba, lo teitzei yisha bi Yerushal Zahav im yatzta chayevet chatat, divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that if a woman would be wearing a Yerushal Zahav, it would be actual masi. Now this is weird. L'chor, it's definitely a tachshit. And if it's a tachshit, how could it possibly be chayev achatas? There are some rishonim who suggest that, in fact, an irshel zahav is uncomfortable, heavy, and comes for one purpose only, to proclaim how rich you are. And proclamations of how rich you are not considered to be normal malbush. Instead, it's like carrying around the sign, I am rich. But it's a status symbol that is not anything else. Normally the status symbol at least pretends to be a watch, or pretends to be a bracelet, or whatever. This thing doesn't pretend to be anything but a status symbol. Now, therefore, status symbols per se are not considered to be tachshit, according to Rabbi Meir.
The status symbol?
For his wife. I mean, she definitely needed it, because she called herself a behemoth. Okay, so therefore, says Rabbi Meir, it would be an actual chiyuv chatas. B'chachamim omrim lo teitze, but it remains a tachshit. V'im yatzta ptura. Rabbi Eliezer omer yotza isha bi'ir shel zahav lechatchila. There's no problem in wearing the Pirshul Zahav, even in the Rishut HaRabim. So we've got from one extreme to the other. The Maika Miflagim. So Rabbi Meir Sabar Masuyu. Rabbi Meir says, look, it's only a Masuyu. It doesn't even have a din of a Tachshit.
Is it hair?
No, it's like literally a crown. Yeah. Rabbanan Sabre, well, but it's an extended Tachshit. It may not be very common, but the point is you wouldn't walk around with a sign saying, I am rich, or you wouldn't walk around with your latest bank statement to pin to your jacket. So it's not, a status symbol has to also be decorative. Maybe we ought to open up a new design of bank statements in gold.
The mayor's saying the brewery wouldn't have worn it.
I suppose not. And the Rabbanan holds a tachshit, so why can't you wear it? The old gezera, the Yom HaShalfa Umach, the Ati Latiye. Since it's so beautiful, your friend's going to ask, let me see that, and she takes it off and shows it, and ends up carrying it. For Rabbi Elazar Savar, Rabbi Eliezer Savar, look, Mandar Kalamevik Bir Shozav, only an Isha Hashuva. Nobody who's wearing a status symbol would do something so gauche as to take off the status symbol and to show it around. Oh, was I wearing something, right, darling? Oh, really? When I get home, I'll take a look in the mirror. So therefore, there's no way she's going to take that off. And lo mashu machvila, and therefore, for her, it would be mutter even lechatchila, because we have no gezera. It's like wearing a baguette, and there's nothing wrong with it. Tosis points out that even if we paskin like that, we'll see later on we have other issues that are of things that are worn by an Isha Chashuva only. It seems we do paskin like this. It doesn't mean that we would start making the difference between who is an Isha Chashuva and who is not an Isha Chashuva. So if you get your tuda of Isha Chashuva, you can wear jewelry on Shabbat. Again, this would be a great way to get people to vote for Shas. Right? Send out to the door to be sure for the mail. Okay, so. That's we're not talking about the katas, we're talking about the shaila of whether it would be removable. It doesn't change the. It's only in terms of the yisur d'rabbanan. It doesn't change Rabbi Meir. I mean, Rabbi Meir holds it's not a takshit, so then it's down the hutzah. That's a different question. We're not talking about Rabbi Meir. So of course it doesn't mean that you get a tuda of Isha Chashuva. It means those things that are only worn by an Isha Chashuva. Now the question is, what about somebody who just made a lot of money?
Nouveau
Chashuva.
Enter certain announcement.
I see you've been doing more research on this issue. Okay. How about a kalila? So how about an actual kalila? The kalila is also a type of crown, and it goes over the forehead, not the hanging that we had earlier, but rather an actual piece that is supported by its own metallic pressure, or it's supported around the padachat like the seats, but it doesn't hang. It's not like a hanging design we had before that would be attached to the woman's tzvokha, like the tzitz itself. So how about the kalilia? What's that then? Is that considered to be the same? Ravasar v'shmol shari. We have actually a machloket whether we would say that it's considered to be something that you might take off and show, and it depends actually how it's made. So if it's made out of metal, it's gold, it's silver, there for sure there's a good chance that she would take it off to show. The arukta, now the question over here is, how about if it was made out of embroidery, in which you include in the embroidery like we do on our talis bags, gold thread, and some decorative stones even, and so on. So there the shaila is on the level of chashivut of that type of embroidered object. So ma'asava aniska ikr. One man the armor holds, well, the designs over there are the essence of it, and therefore you have to treat it like something that would be taken off to be shown. Whereas Marseva Ruktaika, the other Mandiyama says, no, it's the material, the Maisa, that is the Iker over there. And it's not considered to be Chashiv. It would really be low class to take it off and to show it off in Rosh Hashanah. Ravashi says, no. You're being Machmer over here. I would say like this. I'm Masiv Akulam. The Arukta Kulam lo pligit Ashari. Both Rav and Shmuel would be made that if it's made out of cloth, even if it's designed and embroidered, definitely it's mutter. The machlokas is on the aniska. Marta vadilma shalfa umach. You have a yasilatuye. One mandiyama holds well, it's like any other piece of jewelry. Marta, the other mandiyama says, no. It's actually more valuable and more chashiv than a normal piece of jewelry. And therefore, says Shmuel, mandar kala metek beklila, only in Ishikashuva. Ishikashuva lo shafu mafia. So this is the same type of thing that we saw before. A piece of jewelry that is miyuchad only. And the only one who can carry it off is an Ishikashuva. So therefore, it's the type of jewelry that never goes on in the first place. Certainly an Ishikashuva who's wearing that type of jewelry that other people wear that she wouldn't be allowed to walk out with on Shabbos.
Are all our women these days?
Yeah, we'll get to that luck tomorrow. Omalei Rav Shmuel Bar Bar Chana L'Rav Yosef B'Feirush Amartalan Mishmei D'Rav Klili Ashari. Before you became ill, remember Rav Yosef had lost his Talmud by becoming ill. So you told us that you would often remind him. Rav Shmuel Bar Bar Chana reminded Rav Yosef, you told us in the name of Rav that a Klila is mutter, not like Rav says over your Klila also. Omer Leila Rav, they came and reported to Rav about a new arrival who was sprouting all types of halachas. Ota Gavra Rabba Arichel in Arda, a tall, great man has arrived in Arda, umitla, and he's lame. And he's going around telling people that kalilas are okay to wear on Shabbos. So Rav said to himself, now who could that be? Man gava rabba arifa the mitla. Who is a lame strider? Could only be Levi. Shemamina. Now what would Levi be doing in Narada? There's only one explanation. This is what makes Sherlock Holmes proud. If Levi is in Narada, it is clear that Rabbi Apis has died. Why is that? Because Rabbi Apis was the Rosh Yeshiva. What happened is when Rabbi had died, he had appointed Rabbi Hanina to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Hanina refused to accept the position because he said Rabbi Apis was older. So Rabbi Apis became Rosh Yeshiva, and everybody went to learn with him. Levi stayed with Rabbi Hanina, Rabbi Hanina's aunt. Now, if Levi has left, it can only mean that poor Rabbi Hanina has become Rosh Hashiva, which has left Levi without a Gavrusa, and with nobody to learn by, because he wasn't going to go and become a Talmud to Rabbi Hanina, who was a friend in his own age. So therefore, must be that Yosef Rabbi Hanina Bereisha, Rabbi Hanina has now become Rosh Hashiva. Lo havi la'inish la'levi la'meitiv gabe. Levi had nobody before whom he could sit and learn. So Kadilach, apparently what's happened is he's come into town. And then, wait. Doesn't he jump to conclusions? I mean, maybe Rabbi Hanina died. Rabbi Hanina might have died. And Rabbi Apis was just the way he always was. Rabbi Apis, kiddi koi koi. And therefore, Levi didn't have anybody to learn with. So, lo avi leinu shu Levi lemeita ve'kati la'acha. No, says the Gemara, that couldn't be. Rav knew that that wasn't the explanation. It's elementary, my dear Watson. Im ita, the Rabbi Hanina shavi. Had it been Rabbi Hanina who died, then definitely Levi would have been willing to stay and been a Talmud by Rabbi Apis. So Levi, the Rabbi Apis, mikha v'avichayef, he wouldn't have minded going into Rav Avitzer's shir, because Rav Avitzer was older than he was. Furthermore, my dear Watson, there is no way that Rabbi Chanina could have died without becoming Rosh Hashiva first. So Rav Avitzer had to have died, and Rabbi Chanina became Rosh Hashiva. How do I know that? The two, Rabbi Chanina lo sagi de lo malach, it's impossible that he would have died without becoming Rosh Hashiva. Because as Rebbe lay dying, the Chinuch Nafshi the Rebbe, Amar Chanina de Rabbi Chama Yativ Barosh, that Chanina is to be the Rosh Hashiva. Now, once Rebbe said that, Rabbi Chanina could not have died without becoming Rosh Hashiva. Because Ktibu Tzadikim, when it comes to people like Rebbe, it says, Vatigzar Omer Vayokom Lach. When you say something, it comes true. Therefore, Rabbi Chanina would have at one point in his life certainly have been Mekayim in HaShamayim, this Gezeirah of Rebbe. Must therefore be that Rabbi Afas died and Rabbi Chanina finally became Rosh Hashiva. Dorash Levi ben Arda. Now Levi went out and gave a public lecture in which he said a Kalila is okay to wear on Shabbat. In the entire Narada, you had 24 women who could pull off a kliyah. So nothing out of the entire Narada, Esrin va'arva kliyah, Mikula Narada, the entire population, 24 kalilas. Rabba Baravua, however, who lived in L.A., in Bavusa. So over there, he did the same thing. He darshan a kliyah is mutter. And from one block, we won't say what street it is, but for one block, for one block you have 12 kalilas. Just imagine what was going on in Beverly Hills. So, not the Tumani Tre Kalilia Michada Mavua. Amr of Yuna Amr Rav. Now, there's a problem here with the gears of Kalilia, because it's not Amr of Yuna Amr Rav Shmuel. It's either Amr of Yuna Amr Rav, or it's Amr of Yuna Amr Shmuel. Well, there is a gear which is Omer Avid Omer of Sheshes, but it's not Omer Avid Omer Rav Shmuel, that's for sure. So now, whatever it was, whoever it was that he was quoting, said that a Kamara is Shor. Now, the Kamara, remember, we discussed, we'll assume right now that the Kamara that we're talking about over here is a decorative belt. Now the Shaila is it your only belt? In which case, it's unlikely that you'd take it off to show a friend because it's inconvenient to have your clothing fall off on Shabbos. So he's saying a Kamara over here. What would be the din with this Kamara? So a Kamara, which would be like a golden belt and so on, would be okay to wear. Now some say he's talking about Ikedam Diarukta. It's talking about over here a belt that was made out of the same way we had before. Its main, the main beauty of it was, I mean, it's not that it's solid gold or anything, and it's just, you know, there's decorations on it. The Umr of Yosef, did have a talit musevet. If somebody's wearing one of these fancy talis, so it's got the collar, you know, this with the gold or with the silver plated. I mean, we're not going to have a gezeira over there. You're going to take off your talit on Shabbat. Clothing is clothing. There's no, so this is clothing. It's a belt. It's a pretty belt. So what is that? People start undressing.
Difference between men and women?
No, we'll see that. But lechora is something that would be taken off. We'd have to worry about. So we don't make a gezeira on that. The ikeri amre, others learn. The aniska, actually he's talking about a beautiful metallic belt. The Omer of Safra, Midid Ali, Av Neto Shel Melachim. Look, I mean, you can have beautiful things, say a prince would wear something like that, and it's part of his clothing. It's not something that's additional to the clothing, that's just on there. It's the way in which you hold your pants up. You wear your pants up with a beautiful piece of gold. What's wrong with that? Omale Ravina Laravashi, how about if you're wearing a regular belt? And on top of that, you want to put on the Kamara. So now it becomes purely decorative. What's the din over there? So he asks Ravashi, Kamara Ili Hamaina Maya, how about if you put it on top of your normal cloth belt? Omale, what are you saying? You're saying actually Tre Hamaina. You're saying a guy is wearing something that is, what, a double belt? I mean, that's not well, considered to be malbush. It's not serving any purpose. Tosis points out that that is only where you have one on top of another, and it's just not doing anything. Let's say you have two different types of clothing. You're wearing pants. You have a belt on your pants, and then you have a robe on top of the pants. And now you're wearing a belt to keep the robe closed. That for sure is not a problem of wearing two pieces of useless clothing. So, I mean, you had the same issue you would have somebody asks you to wear his jacket for him. On top of yours. And already it's not considered to be Derech Malbush, because if people don't wear two jackets, one on top of the other, you know, unless it's for warmth, and one is a warm jacket and meant to be worn outside and so on. There's actually a machlokas whether it's Bichlal not considered to be Malbush and it's actually carrying on Shabbos. You'd be Chayav Chatas if you're wearing Rosh Hashanah. Or, no. Wearing somebody else's jacket on top of your jacket. Or whether it's just one of these gezeiras in which it's min rabbanim, where so you'll take it off and carry one.
Yes, you can't wear a belt.
Well, could be that would be where you'd have the question if it's derech malbush or not. There are people who wear both.
Yeah,
you know, there might be a shame on that. Omer Vashi, Hai Rasuka. If you're wearing basically a what do you call those? A cape like affair that can easily fly off. So if it has on it things that allow it to be tied so that it doesn't, you know, people well, no, there, I mean, it's heavy and it sits on you. We're talking about like a cape that you wear, just a, more like a scarf kind of thing women wore, or you wear in the rain. You know, there's those waterproof things. If it's got something that will hold it on, so then okay. If that's the case, it's not a chashash that it's gonna fly off and you're gonna carry it. But if it's something that just flies off in the wind, then it very often happens. You'll bend down, pick it up, and you walk a little bit before you put it on yourself. And while you're walking, won't realize that you're walking, you're just around. It's another issue to take into consideration. The low essence, if it doesn't have a clip to hold it on, it's no good. The low bit katala, now we saw earlier the katala, which was the thing where the woman was wearing it up, you know, choking herself, in order to look like she's fat, so that she should be attractive. And the real meaning of the katala is not that it's just a choker, but that it's a menakta pari. Menakta pari means it holds crumbs.
What?
Holds crumbs. In other words, it's a bib, but it's a decorative bib. Yeah. So it prevents the clothing from getting dirty, but meanwhile, it was a very fancy way of dressing for a formal dinner and so on, which is similar to what we do. We take fancy napkins and we'll put them in. So, I mean, obviously, it's a rather low class concern that you're pouring things on yourself. So, but that's what we do it in a very high class way, which is usually what civilization does. It takes the low class things that you have to do and tries to make a virtue out of them. If you have 40 different types of kalim around for eating each particular thing and so on, and you went to school for 5 years to learn how to do it, it's nowhere near as low class as putting a piece of chocolate in your mouth. So that's the katala. The nizamin is a reference to nizmei ha'af. Why dafka nizmei ha'af? Because earrings, it was not normally accessible to take off and to show. Because what would be is you'd have the decoration of the earring hanging down, but the actual ears were normally kept covered as part of the tzniut. So you'd have the tichel would go around the ears, and you'd see the ears coming out. So a woman wouldn't uncover her ear to take out the nezah. I shouldn't get a nose ring, and noses have to be uncovered. They have that unfortunate tendency. And so therefore, there you have to be chashash on the end,
these nose rings are
Well, no, whatever. I mean, or, not permanent. Velo betabat she'ina nor a tabat that's not a even, we understood, even a tabat that doesn't have a seal in it. The mashma'ut being, this is not really a mashma'ut, it's a beferish, a mishnah to come. The mashma'ut being hayesh le'achotem chayevet. It's the derech of the Gemara. Those it says, obviously we're relying on the actual mishnah later on, that says this, that you have a chatas on a sealing ring. But it's the derech of the Gemara when we're doing something locally, to bring a diyuk locally so that we can discuss it. Because you haven't learned that part of the mishnah. Okay, fine. That's to come. But take my word for it. Yesh le'achotem would be chayevet. Okay. So you're saying that a sealing ring is not considered to be a tachshit. Is that true, though? V'raminu tachshitei nashim tmeim. Here, when it comes to the question of tumah v'tayra, and again, here is where we're getting to, where I warned you up front when we started today's daf, that we're going to be getting to true confusion of the dinim of masay on Shabbos to tumah v'tayra. In other words, here we're going to ask a question from a sugya in Kalim, the Gabi, what's considered to be Takshitei Nashim for Kabbalah Tuma, to the sugya in Shabbos, what's considered to be Takshitei Nashim, the Gabi Hotza'ah. It may well be that the values or the parameters for such two different issues don't have areas that are really parallel. We're assuming right now that once something is defined as a Takshit, for Kabbalah Tuma, then it should be a Takshit in terms of Hotza'ah as well. Here you're telling me that a sealing ring is not a Takshit for a woman, and that it would be actually a Chiyuv Chatat for a woman to be walking out with a sealing ring. It would be no different than if she walked out carrying a puncher, which is not on her body. So I guess it's the way that they seal it, is they put it on their body. It doesn't make it a decoration. To be a Chiyuv Chatas. But if that's the case, it should also define whether it's considered to be a Tashu Legabi Kabbalat Tuma. Which is strange, because you would say straight out, that in terms of Kabbalat Tuma, what we want to know is if it's an instrument, not if it's a Tashu. And I guess, unfortunately, I was overly optimistic when I said we'd get there today. But we'll see that there's certainly a possibility that there's no, that that's the issue. Do we define it as an instrument? How do we define it as a tachshit? Well, let's assume that our problem is tachshit. Okay? So, it says, Beferish in Kalim, that tachshitei nashim are tameh, the Elohim tachshitei nashim, the following are considered to be tachshitim. Katla'ot, which are the, what do you call them, pendants? The choker. Nizamim, taba'ot, tabat, ben sheyesh le'achotem, ben she'ein le'achotem, v'nizme'a'av, wait, you just said ben sheyesh le'achotem, ben she'ein le'achotem? It's considered to be tachshitei nashim, so then why does it say that you would be chayev achatas for a woman to be yotze with a chotem? Rabbi Zera, you're right, it's a problem. It represents a different shita. We know that there's a machlokus between Rabbi Nechemia and the Rabbanan. The machlokus consists of what defines the essence of a ring. Is it the what would you call the filler of the ring? Well, no, I mean, in other words, if it's jewelry, it would be the stone. If it's a stamper, it would be the stamper. Is there one word to describe the ring?
No, the ring itself.
The ring itself is the base that is holding whatever it's holding. Is that the way we define the ring? Or do we define the ring that the base is batel to whatever it is that it's serving? In other words, it's only a setting for what is really kosher. And that's a machlokas. And based on that machlokas, we'll have to define the idea over here too. If you hold that the essence is the ring per se, and not the fact that the ring is a setting, so then if you got a golden ring, what do I care if it happens to have an old coin in it, or if it's got a stamper in it, or if it's got a diamond in it, or if it's got a golden ring? That's what's important. And if you hold the filling is the ikar, and the ring is only viewed as a setting, then there's a big difference. So, and where do we see there's that machlok? It's the Tanya. He shall matech v'chut ma shall almog. If the ring itself is mekabel tuma, because it's metal, whereas the chotan is not mekabel tuma, it's made out of almog, it's tuma. Why? Because the yikr is the ring. He shall almog v'chut ma shall matech. And on the other hand, if you would have a coral ring, literally, which has on it a decorative gold design on top, then it's tahor, because the gold design is not the yikr, the almog is the yikr. Rabbi Nechemia mitame, whereas Rabbi Nechemia is just the opposite. Rabbi Nechemia mitabat alekacha chutma. In any situation where you have a substrate and something on that substrate, so you have a ring, the important thing is not the substrate, it's what's on it. So you have an ol for an animal. An ol for an animal is made out of wood. But nonetheless, on an ol, halech achas samlonav. What you need to look at on the ol is to look at the links outside that you control the animal with. Those things are made out of metal. That's what you look at. If it comes to a kolav, you've got a hanger. This, of course, is not what we would call a hanger. It's I don't know if we have a word for it, but they sell these all over, where you have a piece of wood, and then you have hooks in the wood. So you hang up the piece of wood, and then you can put begodim, many begodim or keys on that thing. So over there, alecha kamas me'otav. If you go look on the kolav, if the kolav is made out of wood, so say it's kliyetz, but if the hooks are made out of metal, then it's considered to be, it's a kli matechet. So again, another example of substrate doesn't matter, the usable portion is what matters. That's the usable portion. If you've got,
like the goal of the matter.
Yeah. The instrument. The arsa, an arsa is a very large weighing device that you can attach large things to. And basically, what it's got. It's got chains on it.
It's a balance scale
with chains that you hang the thing on the chain, mm-hmm. because it's too big to put into a container. So there, halakha kashal shavotav. If the part that holds the kli for weighing is metal, then that's what's important. Whereas chachamim amrin, I'm saying never. Hakol halakha ha'amid. It's the substrate that's always important, because that's what keeps it together. What good are these hooks if they're not in the wooden background? What good is the ceiling on the ring if there's no ring to hold it there, and so on and so forth? Therefore, what we should look at is the substrate itself, and memela, when it comes over here, would be the same thing. So if you're taking a look at the ring, what do I care, according to Rabbi Nechemia, if I've got a seal in it? The important thing is the ring. It's a golden ring. Fine, a golden ring is considered to be a tachshit. According to Chachamim, what am I doing? Carrying around a seal. You carry around a seal on Shabbos, so then that's obviously not a tachshit, and you would be chayav. That explains the contradiction. And let's go for Prokhor Pei. Reb Nachman, I thought we were up to Reb Nachman. I got to include Rav, we'll put it up for tonight. All right. Reb Yochanan Omar, however, we think of Meyabo Mayim Latinok. Rabbi Yochanan lo boi me'in melachari shema v'tanya v'chol kli asher yeshev alav yoko kofa sa'ov yashav alav alea kofa takav yashav alea yehetamei amudoma asher yeshev alav azav mishim yuchad v'yeshiva yatsa ze shomrim lo amod v'nasim lachtenu. Rabbi Lazar omer only v'midrasot omrim amod v'nasim lachtenu v'in omrim v'dami met amod v'nasim lachtenu. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan Omer, no, Afo Mer B'Tamei Meita Mod V'Nasim Lachtenu. Well, I guess Epoch Kamaita. Umay Chazita De Apakta Kamaita. Why not Epoch Bakraita? Because Hashemini Lei Rabbi Yochanan Deboi Me'in Melach HaRishona. Titznan. Sandal Shel Be'ima Shel Matechet Tamei. Now, what good is it? Omer Rav Ro'i Lishtot Bo Mayim B'Milchama. Rabbi Chanina Omer Ro'i Lasur Bo Shemen B'Milchama. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, it has to be usable as a shoe. B'sha'a sheboreach min ha'krav, menicho beraglav, v'ratz al ha'kotzim ve'abar kanim. My ben Rav l'Rabbi Chanina, even out of the mois. My ben Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Chanina, even ben out of the yuck here, it's too heavy to run. V'lo b'hir shal zahav, my b'hir shal zahav. Rav Abar v'chanan Rabbi Yochanan, it means that Yerushalayim did the hava. Kiriyabat by Rabbi Akiva l'David. Ton Rabbanan lo teitze isha b'hir shal zahav, v'im yatzta chayevet chatat, d'ver Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim lo teitze, but im yatzta p'tura. Rabbi Eliezer omer, even l'chatchila, yotza isha b'hir shal zahav l'chatchila. Rabbi Meir Savar Masuyu, Rabbanan Savri Takshitu. Therefore, Dilma Shofu Machile, Yatilatuye, and even though Midiraita would be okay, we're afraid. Rabbi Eliezer says, nothing to be afraid of. Man Dark and Lamevi Birshal Zav, Isha Hashuva, Lo Mishlafo Machile. Kalila, Rabba Sarbish Moshar, De Aniska, Kuli Amalo Pligi de Asur, Ki Pligi de Arukta. Marsavarukta Iker. Ravashi Madilukula, the Arukta Kulayamalo Pligidashari, Ki Pligi the Aniska, Marsava Dilma Shalfu Mahviya Vyatilatuye, Marsava Mandakala Metha Piklila, Oli Nishakashuva, Ishakashuva Shalfu Mahviya. Omalay Rushmu Barbachan Rabios, Befeirusha Martala, Mishmin Rab, Klili Ashari. Omalay Rab, Ota Gavra Rabba Richlinar, Dal Mitla, V'dorash klila shori. Omar, who is a gabar, rabba, richad, yit, that's gotta be Levi. Shema min anach nafshe, the Rebbe Hafez. V'yotz Rebbe Chanina bereshem, l'havi l'hinu shalevi l'meitiv gadeh. V'kati l'acha. Well, why do you say that? Dilma nach nafshe, the Rebbe Chanina. Rebbe Hafez, k'dekoi, k'oi, v'l'havi l'hinu shalevi l'meitiv gadeh. V'kati l'acha. Because im it, the Rebbe Chanina shachiv, Levi would have stayed there. And the Rebbe Hafez, mi'chav ha'bechayev le. V'su, Rabbi Chanina lo sagi de lo molech. Rabbi Chanina nafshin de rebi. Omer Chanina Rabbi Chama yotiv barosh. Uchtibu b'tzadikim atik zorom v'yokom lo. Dorash Levi ben Ardo klili ashori. Nofik esim v'arba klila mikula nardo. Mas dorash Rabba barvu b'mechuzah klili ashori. V'nof k'tman ezek klila mechadam avua. Omer Yudah Omer Shmuel kamara ashori. Yikdi Omer de'arukta. Beyond Rav Yosef, that's because we didn't have a talit muzeve, but it's still clothing. We didn't have a niska, almost like we have it in later shumalachim. Amalei Rav Yehuda Ravashi, what about a kamara above your belt, ma? Amalei, what? Treyam nayokam? It's for sure carrying. Amalei Rav Yehuda Ravashi, hay rasuka, yitlen yifrachaya shori vilo asu. Lobi k'tala, my k'tala menak taperi. Nizomim nizmei ha'af. So what he's saying? Rayeshala Khotam Khayevet. So in other words, love Takshitu. Vraminu Takshite Nashim Tmeyot Veiloin Takshite Nashim Katala Ot Nizamim Tabaot Vitabat Benjiyeshala Khotam Alechotan. When is mea Ribzerlo Tashim. Horegina Khemi Arabana. Titanya Yishamatakhut Mashal Mog Tmeya. Yishala Mog Rekut Mashal Matakhatora. Rabbi Nechemia betame, Shaya Rabbi Nechemia omer betabat, always olakaka chutma. Ba'ol, always olakaka sam lonav. Bekolav, olakaka masmerotav. Sulam, olakaka shlivotav. Arsa, olakaka shashalotav. Kachomim omrim, hakol olakaka amamid. So by extension over here, Rabbi Yisha, it's a nice golden ring, you go according to the Ma'amid. Whereas according to the Chachamim, you go according to what the thing.
Oh.